Hi, I'm Claire Mitchell QC. Welcome to the Witches of Scotland podcast. I'm a lawyer who specialises in miscarriage of justice cases, and we're bringing you this podcast because we want to tell you about the women who were accused, prosecuted, convicted, and ultimately executed as witches in Scotland.
I'm Zoe Venditozzi, and I'm a writer who's always had an interest in the witches, and I feel that this dark mark against Scotland needs a reckoning.
The campaign Witches of Scotland wants three things. Firstly, a pardon for all those convicted of witchcraft. Secondly, an apology for all those who were accused as witches. And finally, a national monument in recognition of all those who are affected by this terrible miscarriage of justice.
Over the forthcoming weeks, we'll be talking to a whole host of experts about the history and the modern day connections to the Witches of Scotland. Hello, and welcome to the Witches of Scotland podcast. This week we are on episode 28, and we're going to be taking an international look today because we're going to be speaking to the editor-in-chief of the Catalan historical magazine Sapiens and about their newly launched campaign for the people accused of witchcraft in Catalonia. Before that, though, we're going to be talking about a few things that have happened this week. It's been a busy old week, hasn't it, Claire?
It has been a very, very busy week. On the 17th of March, the petition closed. And what was the number, Zoe? Are we 3,400 approximately?
I think so. Yeah, round about there with a few odd numbers after it.
Amazing. So many people having signed the petition. I mean, close to the number of people who were alleged to have been involved in the witchcraft trial. So that closed. And on the same day it closed, there was a Scottish Government response to the petition that had been put in. And I must say, I don't know about you, Zoe, but I was over the moon about the response that the Scottish Government has given us. There's two things that I think are really important. The first is that for the first time, as far as I'm aware, ever, the Scottish Government, or indeed any official body in Scotland, has actually acknowledged the wrong done to women and men who were killed in the time of the witchcraft trials. They said that and this is a quote, "The Scottish Government acknowledges that those accused and convicted of the offence of witchcraft were women who faced discrimination and had very little protection in law from allegations of criminality, including witchcraft." So for, you know, the first time, it's an acknowledgement that these people suffered a miscarriage of justice.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge.
It's absolutely huge. I mean, they go on to say, "Whilst undoubtedly much remains to be done, since then society has vastly improved and women's rights have been acknowledged and put into law. It's a priority for the Scottish Government to achieve women's equality and further women's rights in Scotland. Part of this is to ensure that processes are in place and accessible to adequately challenge outdated and harmful views on the role of women in society." And I am delighted that not only have the Scottish Government engaged with the fact that this is a current women's issue, it's everyone's issue, I should say, but a current issue involving women, and they get and they see the relevance to the modern day. The second thing that I think was really important in what the government response was that they accepted the argument that was put in the petition, which was that there were similarities between the men who were convicted of offences under the Homosexuality Act getting a pardon, and also those convicted under the Witchcraft Act. And what the Scottish Government say is, "There is recent precedent for legislation in the area of pardons. The Historical Sexual Offences, Pardons and Disregards Scotland Act 2018 provided for a pardon for all those who were convicted under discriminatory laws or where more general laws had been used in a discriminatory manner in respect of same-sex sexual activity where the same activity between people of a different sex was not criminalised. There are clearly similarities between the injustices of those convicted in a discriminatory manner for same-sex sexual activity and the injustices of women classed as witches many centuries ago, which could justify legislative steps being taken in this area." So I think that was, quite frankly, more than I could ever have imagined that the Scottish Government would come back and say immediately. I mean, I did think the point was right and the point we were making is right, but I'm just so delighted that it's immediately been seen by the Scottish Government.
I think it's remarkable, actually, that that's happened and it's so quickly. And it's brought into quite stark contrast with something else that's happened this week with one of the big bodies that's in Scotland, which is the National Trust. So, Claire, what was it that we discovered this week that the National Trust were planning on doing?
So, yes, Zoe, we were contacted on Twitter by Dr. Johnston Smith, bringing to our attention an article that had been written by the National Trust for Scotland. And they'd been writing about the refurbishment of Gladstone's land. And in the article, they said that they were naming a holiday apartment after William Struthers. And the article is about the refurbishment of Gladstone's land. And it had, as part of the article, sort of inset, which said, an eminent cleric sat in his splendid chamber, writing hellfire sermons and pondering a suspected witch's fate. The article also said he was involved in the trial of women suspected of witchcraft, among them Marion Muir, who was later executed. The article goes on to say that the holiday apartment, quote, includes playful references to the life and times of this cantankerous figure. And I just read that and I thought, you're naming a holiday apartment in relation to a man who had involvement in the witchcraft trials, where you're saying that he was involved in the trials of women and involved in a case where a woman was executed, and you think that's appropriate for a name for a holiday apartment? Is it just me?
I think it also. No, it's not just you. I think you're right. And I think it goes to the fact that people generally, and this is part of one of the angles of our campaign, is to educate people and to get them to think a little bit more about this, which is that people just still often see the witches and the witch trials as kind of funny, like, or really not that important, or so long ago that it doesn't matter anymore. And I think it's because, you know, as we say every week, I think, on the podcast, that it's really important to think of the people that were executed, the men and the women, as being people. I think that a lot of people have lost sort of touch with that. I'm pretty saddened that the National Trust, who I imagine are pretty into accuracy in historical research, are so unthinking. You know, there's lots of different publications that I would sort of think, well, you know, they're not duty bound necessarily to be particularly intelligent about that. But the National Trust, really, I don't think that they've got an excuse for this. I think it's pretty crummy.
Zoe, they did a brilliant article on International Women's Day about the Scold's bridal.
Uh-huh.
And they talked about the way that it had been described in a log. It had been described as something used for blethering women or something. And they were holding that up and saying, look, isn't this wrong? It's wrong to remember history in this way. And on International Women's Day, essentially, we should do better. The institutions should think about these things. So, you know, only a week and a half ago, they were saying, this is what we should do. Institutions should do better. And then this article comes out. What I would say, though, is that they said that they would like to talk with us. An article in The Scotsman says that the National Trust for Scotland says it wants to talk to the Witches of Scotland about how it represents this challenging element of Scotland's history, which saw many women needlessly suffer. I mean, I think the first thing that they can do is decide not to name that holiday apartment after a man who was involved in the witch trials, and maybe think about naming it after a woman of the 17th century.
I mean, I know that this is a crazy thought, right? But you know how we are slightly more than half of the population. It could be occasionally nice just to remember that women are part of our country. It would just be nice. I mean, it would be great.
It would allow us to reflect on the fact that there were actually women in the 17th century, you know, at all, that we could have some recognition of them, other than
that men just didn't just spring out of, you know, the ground, that there were women giving birth to men and also doing stuff in their lives. You know, it really drives me absolutely bananas that there isn't just an immediate thought of, you know, we're really aware of the fact that there's a huge, hugely skewed tendency to memorialize men everywhere, right? Not just in this country, but in this country, okay? So we know that. So why are the National Trust not thinking, well, is there a woman that might be of interest here? Now, I'm not saying, you know, that necessarily there are millions of women to choose from, because God knows there's probably not that much of a record of women that did that much the same way that we've recorded men's history.
Yeah.
But come on, think a wee bit about, you know, what women's part has been in history. So yeah, I'm on a bit of a tear today, actually. So I should just calm down a little bit.
Let's move on and let's name some people who were involved in witchcraft trials and tell their story. Today, unsurprisingly, I have decided to name the woman, Marion Muir. Now, if you don't know who Marion Muir is, Marion Muir is the woman who was involved in the witchcraft trial where William Struthers was one of her investigators. So the holiday apartment, which the National Trust is naming after William Struthers, we want to speak today about Marion Muir, the woman that was killed in a witchcraft trial. Marion Muir was a woman from Leith. We know that she was widowed. We know that there were five commissioners in the case against her and two investigators, one of them being William Struthers. We know that Mr. Struthers was a minister at St. Giles in 1614, and then again at 1626 to 1633. He was involved as an investigator in relation to her trial whilst he was minister at St. Giles, and she was executed in 1632. It was said that she had entered into a demonic pact, what is described as an anti-baptism, where she had been given the new name of Catherine. She was said to have made a deal with the devil. I think what I should say is that this is how we should honour the dead whose lives were taken in the most brutal way in a terrible miscarriage of justice, by remembering them and not the people involved investigating the case against her. Zoe, you're going to tell us about some more people who were involved in witchcraft trials, except this time a bit further from home.
Yeah, now I've picked something that I think is really quite interesting here with relevance to what we're talking about today. I'm looking at something that happened in Catalonia, but it's something called the Navarre Witch Trials that happened in 1525 to 1526. And I think what's interesting about this is because it's like the first cases of witch trials where the church got involved. Now, it doesn't name the witches, but I do think that this is quite interesting. So because of these witch trials, it led to the church's involvement and then sort of preceded what the Spanish Inquisition were going to do when they conducted the witch trials. So in 1525, the council at Navarra sent a special commissioner to inspect the mountain regions of the Navarrese northeastern Pyrenees. And there's a quote here. They were described at the time as, where for a long time they had not known what temporal or spiritual justice means. The commissioner brought along two girl witches who know how to discover witches, it said as well. They were young girls of 9 and 11 years old, sisters, and the two girls were brought on the tour by the commissioner, inspected the villagers, looking for signs of the devil's mark in the villagers' eyes. Now, unsurprisingly, from what we know about witch trials in other places, this led to a number of accusations and then trials. The commissioner arrested and then executed unspecified number of people for witchcraft in five different places. He purchased masses for the confiscated property of the condemned to ask the blessing of God for his missions. This is all very much bound up with the religion. The Navarrese witch hunt, however, provoked intervention by the Supreme Council of the Spanish Inquisition. And in August of 1525, the Inquisition was granted jurisdiction over the witch hunt. And the 30 people that were left that had been accused of witchcraft were handed over to them. They also insisted on inspecting the ongoing witch trials, which sort of chimes a wee bit with what we've said about Scotland and the Privy Council. In December of 1525, the Spanish Inquisition then issued guidelines on how to deal with witch trials. So they became a bit more formalised. And the guidelines said such things as they needed to be sceptical about spells, which caused most accusations and death sentences. They banned the confiscation of the property of anyone condemned for witchcraft, and they reserved for the Inquisition the right to try witches and paid more attention to re-educating witches rather than issuing death sentences. So they were less inclined to kill those that had been accused of being witches and more inclined to think that they could be in some way rehabilitated. These guidelines were then followed by the Spanish Inquisition in witchcraft cases from 1526 until 1609, when the Basque witch trials occurred. During that time, many people were executed by the Inquisition of Spain in Spain, especially in Navarre. The largest persecution in Navarre took place in 1527, and it was led by the Inquisitor Avellaneda. I hope I'm saying that properly. I don't know if it's Avellaneda. Sorry if I'm getting that wrong. Acting on the same valleys, the Navarrese Royal Council deputy had punished in 1525, and that resulted in approximately 80 residents who were burnt to death, I think. The Spanish Inquisition didn't always succeed in keeping the secular courts from dealing with witchcraft cases, and a failure to do so resulted in a great witch hunt in Catalonia between 1618 and 1622, where there was about 100 victims, until that was then subdued and that sort of rash of trials then stopped. And then after 1622, the number of witch trials dwindled in Spain until the mid-17th century. So that's just a bit of an overview using Wikipedia, thank you very much, about what had actually happened with the early days with the involvement of the Spanish Inquisition. So it's interesting to see that it was echoed that things kind of got out of hand somewhat, and that then there was a bigger body that came in and said, listen, we need to sort this out, which definitely echoes what we've read about and know about in Scotland.
I think it's kind of surprising to me that the Spanish Inquisition appears to be the voice of reason for a while. That's a kind of...
I was quite stunned by that. Yeah, yeah. And during the Spanish Inquisition, which I could talk about another time, but I noticed that the different things that they came and looked for in different communities, one of the aspects that was, you know, wrong, obviously, in the eyes of the church was witchcraft, where it goes into a bit more detail.
And it chimes with our expert today. I was going to say expert witness. It chimes with our expert coming to speak to us today.
Yes. So we're very happy to be introducing to the podcast the editor-in-chief of Catalan's historic magazine, Sapiens, and that is Sonia Casas. Hello there, and welcome to the Witches of Scotland podcast. It's great to have you here, Sonia Casas. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you might start us off by telling us who you are and why it is that we have you on the podcast today.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm a journalist, and I am the editor-in-chief of the magazine called Sapiens. Sapiens is a history magazine. It's written in Catalan. And it has been published in Barcelona for more than 15 years, I think 18 now. So during this time, it has become a bestseller magazine here in Catalonia. And we're proud of it because I would say it's a sort of reference for many people.
And what in particular is it about Sapiens that has something to do with the Witches of Scotland?
Yes, because, well, last week we launched a campaign with the slogan, "No eran brujas, eran donas," which means they were not witches, they were women. And this campaign is linked to a long research done by two historians, Pau Castell and Agustí Alcoverro, right? So it's a mixture. There's the investigation, the historical investigation, and we have transform this in a campaign that is influenced by your own campaign in Scotland. This is true. We saw your campaign. We also saw different movements in Switzerland, in Norway, in Germany. So we were inspired by that, and we mixed both things, and we thought that March was a great month to release this issue.
And what is it that your campaign actually wants? What do you want to have happen?
Well, the aims of our campaign are, well, a little bit like yours, like your campaign. It's to pardon those innocent women, recover their memory without prejudices and falsehoods, you know, because there's a lot of that as well. And dignify them, explaining just what happened, historically happened. And also, and it's like, this is like the second part, it's promoting acts of reparation. You say that? You call it like this?
Absolutely.
Historical reparation throughout all Catalonia. This would be the main goals. And let me explain you a little bit what happened here and why we were interested as a history, as the referent history magazine here. I think it's similar that what happened in Scotland, that the witch hunt was very intense in certain decentralized, you call that? It's okay, decentralized territories, like Scotland, Catalonia, Switzerland as well, because Catalonia was not only one of the territories in Europe where more women were accused of witchcraft, at more than 1,000. It's a lot comparing with the rest of Spain, for instance. There was very concentrated in Catalonia. But it was also, and this is, I think it's very interesting, it's the first place in Europe where there was a specific law to judge cases of witchcraft. This law was written in 1424 in Les Valls d'Àneu. This is in the Pyrenees. It's close to, we say, near Aragon, between Catalonia and Aragon. And there are these documents that prove this. So it's very important that I think that it's not only for Catalonia, but for the European history as well.
And why do you think that it's important to have your campaign?
Why it's important? Well, we think it's important because the campaign works also as a claim for all women who have been repressed throughout history just for the fact of being women. I mean, it appeals that as well. And it's in the historical documents that we found, and I'm sure that in Scotland happens the same, it's crystal clear that many of these women were in a position of weakness. Here in Catalonia, many of the women persecuted were immigrant. In that period, Catalonia received a lot of immigration coming from southern France and Occitania. You say Occitania? Well, many of these women were immigrants. There were poor women, healing women as well, all single women, widows, women without the structure of a family and the protection, you know? And all of them were stigmatized, pointed out by their own neighbors, or neighbors, male and women, we have to say that as well, because it's true that they were accused also for many, many other women. But I think that it works also like this, as a claim for women repression in general.
Do you think it has a 21st century meaning as well? Does it have a meaning to women in Catalonia currently?
Yes. In fact, the campaign, let me tell you that it's been a success. We are overwhelmed and we are very, very happy because for this as well, because this time everyone has reacted very, very well, even groups very little involved and persons little involved in matters of historical claims. These groups, and I'm talking about, I don't know, feminist activists or teenagers, many teenagers as well, they have felt appealed because these so-called witches work as a symbol of the repression that women have traditionally suffered through history. So the response has been very, very positive.
Have you had any criticism? We've had a very small amount of criticism, but have you not? It's just been overwhelmingly positive.
No, as far as I know, we don't have received any criticism. And in this, it's 1 week that we released the campaign, and more than 10,000 people have signed up our manifesto. It's on our website. And we have also received the support of many public and private institutions. We are collecting now support videos from lawyers, artists. There are feminist activists, and there are 150 academic and history professors from all different Catalan universities that are joining and supporting the campaign. Criticism, as far as I know, we don't have received it.
And are you in Barcelona?
Well, we are now doing, yes, we are a little bit spread because everyone is home, working from home. And yes, our newsroom is in Barcelona. We are going to Barcelona once per week now with COVID and so on, we have discovered that working from home, it has good things and bad things.
Say. Yeah, it's amazing though that even though everybody's on lockdown and is working from home and so on, that people have gotten so behind the campaign so quickly with you. I mean, 10,000 signatures in 1 week is amazing. We're delighted with the fact that we've got about 2,300 signatures after about 5 weeks. Like for us, we think that's really huge, but 10,000 is remarkable.
It's a lot.
We've only had a small amount of criticism, but there has been a little bit, but it's often people that are quite, ironically, they're quite stuck in the past. They don't view it as being important to try and think about the past and the impact that it has on the present and in fact the future. So I would say those people tend to be old fashioned. They think we should just shut up and move on. That basically is what the criticism has been.
The key of the success has been, I think, that we have organized it. There has been a good marketing plan because we had a video, very impact video, was healing, and with actresses and well-known people here. And also the media has, every March now, the media, I suppose in Scotland is the same, during the first week of March, there's a lot of articles and news about women, all this movement. And well, for the media was good to have this campaign because it's a historical campaign. It's different from the usual feminist movements, and they found it interesting, and they have given us a lot of support, and the mainstream TV and radio stations, they have interviewed us during last week. So this helped us to spread the message and to achieve this 10,000. I think that now there were 12,000 already.
That is amazing.
But it's true that it's now, and I don't know if in the next month this is going to stop a little bit. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Do you have a time limit for it? Do you know when you're going to stop the petition? Is there a time limit?
Yes, we have republished. The magazine has been sold out. This is the magazine.
Yay!
It's sold out in this moment in Catalonia. It's completely sold out. And we have, next week we are going to put it again in on sale. And
I think a couple of copies coming to Zoe.
Oh, exciting. Yeah, that's so cool.
You guys said that you were going to post a couple to us.
Yes,
so
yes,
I think our interview.
I hope you receive it soon. Let's see how post goes. But it's gonna arrive. Now in the future, what are we going to try? We are going to try that different towns and villages where these women were executed, they organize a sort of commemoration, conferences. There are city halls that already are asking us to organize a conference with the two historians that publish all the study in our magazine. There's one village that they told us that they are interested in building a monument, a statue, because they have a woman that was executed there, so they were interested in building a statue for her. So this is, we'll see in the next month. This is now not, it's not only us, it's the society and the civil society and the city halls of the different towns, if they are interested in doing sort of commemorations or
in Catalonia. Are you good for having statues of women? Or are all your statues, like in Scotland, the vast majority of them, are they men from the past?
The vast majority are
yeah.
From the past. This is true.
I'm
trying to remember. In Barcelona, for instance, there's one in Gràcia. It's connected to Mercè Rodoreda, a writer. But it's not even from her. It's from a character of the main novel, La Plaça del Diamant. So.
Yeah,
I cannot remember honestly now a statue of a woman in
Queen Victoria in Scotland. That's the one I can think of. I can think of one in Govan, which is a good statue.
Right.
You make me think now,
Where I live, the city that I live next to, where Claire lives, we've got, I think it's just Queen Victoria. I think we've just got one statue of Queen Victoria, but I think that's it. And I think that's something that we've talked about a lot on the podcast, about representations of women in public life and how important it is, as, you know, as growing up as a young girl, and also for boys. 1950s, you know, growing up to see, oh, women are important too, women do big things too, women were victims of things too, women were in wars too, you know, all that kind of thing. It's very, very important, I think, that we address that. One of the things that we're asking for in our campaign is for a national memorial, a national
Yes.
So is that something that you would like?
No, let me tell you that this was one of the things that we like a lot about your campaign, because you were going like a step further asking this, because not in Switzerland and Norway, they have not arrived to ask this. And we thought that this was very brave and very, well, and very necessary. What we ask is that the city halls, and let's see if the Catalan government, if they can subscribe our manifesto. And our manifesto is there. You call it this manifesto as well?
Yes.
Yep.
Understand. Okay. So, and for us, it would be a success if they can read the manifesto in the city halls, and a monument. That this is like, well, this it's very ambitious. Let's say it. We don't expect that, but I think that if they read it and they do a sort of commemoration, is nice. In fact, our goal is that people knows that this history.
Yeah,
And it's, as I told you, Catalonia is one of the places in Europe where the witch hunt was more intense. And well, we explain why, no, and the reasons that, as I see it, for what historians are saying, it's very, very similar to Scotland. So you can figure out that. Another thing that we have included, and it's like the historical, the most important part, historically talking, is the research they have done. What they have done, these two historians. Well, they have gone through the archives, and they have collected all the data concerning the trials, the women that have been persecuted and executed, the men that were witch hunters and make it like a way of living, you know. They have collected all this data, and we have put it together in the magazine, but also in an interactive map. In our website. So what is happening now? That people from Girona, from Lleida, from small towns, they can go to this map and they see what witches were executed or just judged there in their own towns, what were their names, what happened in the trial, all the data we have that these two historians have. So we're proud of that, because it has been a huge work that our internet, the journalist that has done it, she has done a lot of work, but because there are 700 names of women in all spread, all Catalonia. And now you can go through this map and search the interactive map and you will see.
We will put links on our socials to your website.
I can send it to you.
Can do that.
Perfect.
We already have that. We were very lucky that some of our academics, Dr. Louise Yeoman and Professor Julian Goodyear, two academics, we've spoken to Professor Goodyear. They did a survey of Scottish witchcraft and collated all the information. And then later, an interactive map was made. So we have the same people in Scotland can go online, can go to their local area and see. It provides a real impact where people can see locally where this thing happened. I think it's very powerful.
Yes, it's very powerful. And it has been a long work, but now we are like receiving the good feedback from all these towns. For this reason, these towns now are interested in doing things, because they have a name, a surname, they have a story. When you have the story, it appeals to you directly. It's not women, it's Katarina, Tal, Sala, and she was 43, she was widow, you know, you have a story there. And that's what it's nice to land the big history, land it to the small histories of the personal people. No?
Exactly. We feel that really strongly. In each episode of our podcast, we name three individual women or men or three individual stories. And so that we each week are saying, remember these people. Remember, this was just a person just like you, just like me. They weren't necessarily doing anything strange or unusual. They were just living their lives. and somebody saw fit to accuse them. We think that's really, really important. And then they make that connection in their mind of, oh, this isn't just a number, this is an actual person. And then I think that there's not really a way that you can then say, oh, it's not important, or I don't care, or just leave it. I think once you start to think of it in terms of their people, your humanity kicks in and you say, ah, right, yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course, this is a good thing.
You sum up very well what I wanted to say.
What's next for your campaign? Is that the campaign fully launched now and then you just keep promoting it, or is there something else to come?
No, it goes. I mean, we started and now we'll see where it goes. We hope that in the next month. There are several towns. Reus, they have said they were very interested. Different city halls, different locations, they have all already asked us to go there or present the magazine, or, you know, to have the historians there doing a conference. And let's see how it works. We expect going all this year, I mean, until autumn. Maybe right. We would like in autumn, maybe we can do another act. We have already done it. Last week, we were in Barcelona. In Palau Robert, in Passeig de Gràcia, in the city center, and we had a presentation with your video.
We were very, very surprised to find ourselves
on
being beamed into.
Oh yeah,
it was great. No, it was great because it's the proof that this is not a freak thing that we are now doing because we thought that it would be nice. No, it's a serious thing. It's an international movement, and we wanted to show that.
Yeah, we hope so. I mean, we hope just as many countries as possible join in. We want the Witches of France. We want the Witches of Italy. We've already had some various different people getting in contact with the Witches of England. We think that it's really, really important to remember our past so that we understand our present. It would be as crazy as looking at the current inequality in terms of racism without looking at the history of slavery. And we think that if you have to look at equality for women, you have to go back and look at the history of women. And that's
slavery is one of the things that we want to work in the future, because it's another thing that in not in Catalonia and not in Spain either is well treated or is deeply treated, and, or, you know. And in fact, this that you're mentioning is a little bit the key of success of Sapiens. You have to think that for the generation of my parents, that they grown up in a dictature, they didn't have access to the Catalan history. So Sapiens has done a big, big job explaining the Catalan history from another point of view, because it was only explained from one side of the history. And I'm not saying that one side has the right part of the history. History is a construction of all different points of view. But it is true that when you have been persecuted, or you have lose a war, or your point of view is not so clear, no? So in this sense, I think Sapiens has done a great, great job. Basically, in the beginning of Sapiens was we have published a lot of investigations, and we have explained things through another point of view. So for this reason, people has and not only from the 20th century, also from the medieval period, we have clarified a lot of things that were confused in our history for many people. Basically, the generations that now they have 60, 50 years old, and they couldn't have this information at school and not in the universities as well.
It's brilliant work that you're doing. We don't have the same reasons for not knowing our history as you do. You have very specific reasons in your history for not knowing our history. But for some reason in Scotland, we just haven't looked at the history of women. But we're saying loudly to anyone who will listen to us that we think that the history of women in Scotland should be taught in Scottish schools so that people know about it. Zoe's a teacher. She's spoken a lot.
I think the reason that we weren't taught about it is because we've got a very Anglo-centric, because we're part of the United Kingdom, I think a lot of the teaching we've had is very focused on really what the empire and what Britain did.
It's funny that for Catalans, we always think, Scotland has the power of the language, that you can, how can express this? We think that the Scottish history is more well known because of the cinema, because of the literature, you know, the TV series, I don't know, even a series but like Outlander.
But you know, Sonia,
in the battle of the Scottish, as we Catalans, we don't have that. I mean, Catalans and many countries that we don't have this power of having a cinema or a Braveheart or, you know, this sort of mainstream movies and TV series that at least, and we know that it's a fiction and it's not, but at least people can know a little bit about the Scottish history. You know what I mean? I don't know if I express it well.
No, but absolutely.
It's difficult to spread our history to the world, no? And explaining.
The problem that we have with that, though, is that we've got this history of Scotland, but because it's really Hollywood in some ways, because it's not true, it means that people, but it looks glorious. It looks, you know, like Scotland's really tough and amazing. What it means is that there's a lot of people in Scotland that just accept that as the truth and are not hugely interested maybe in digging beneath that. And I think that one thing about the witches, there's an aspect of that with the witches too, you know, that there is a kind of a Hollywood type version of what the witches were.
We talked about these.
And that, you know, that's in itself, people just accept that. Because it's easy, right? We're getting fed it. You sit back, you watch it, you know. It's the same as with, you know, William Wallace or whatever. It's not the truth. And I feel really strongly, this is why I like the fact that you're doing it as a history organization, that you're looking at it and you're saying, right, here is the truth. We've got documents that prove this. This is factual. Instead of a lot of people saying things like, well, I believe such and such happened. But where's your evidence? You know, and this is something that we've talked about a lot with Witches of Scotland, is that there's enough material within the story of the witches that it's horrifying itself without adding anything extra to it. So I really like the idea that you as historians are leading it, because it'll all be the truth with evidence. I like that.
Exactly. Yes, it is true. One of the more difficult things was matching these feminist idea symbolic of the witches and the reality.
Yes.
To historians since the beginning, they said, no, this empowered women or this symbol that has been constructed is not exactly historically truthful, no? I don't know how to say it. But it works as well. As I said, it's a symbol of the repression of women. We don't need to act more super powerful women and mystery women with a secret knowledge that may happen I think that in Germany, along these areas, Switzerland, Germany, there were also surgeons or I don't know, healers. There were more this type of women, but not in Catalonia. In Catalonia, as I said, they were weak women. They were basically immigrants, widows, poor women, women that didn't fit in the society.
It's so sad that here we are in 2021 and we're still having the same conversations. We're still, you know, I don't know if you followed this, but there's been a terrible case in London over the last week where a young woman went missing on her way home from work and is now suspected to have been murdered. And the whole conversation again has been about, women aren't safe, we're not safe to walk alone, you know, what can we do about it? And I think there's a stronger voice now of women saying, actually, it's men need to change their behaviour. We need to talk about this. We need to talk about the relationship between men and women. We need to talk about power structures. So I think that it's very timely, these campaigns about witchcraft. It's not gone away. It's still the issue of just being born a woman, just being a woman is enough for you to be in a state of being vulnerable. So I think that that's why we are so supportive of your campaign and why you're so supportive of our campaign. Because it's looking for the same thing, which is equality and safety for women.
Exactly. And for us, it's also it was also important to at least in the magazine we explain it, that there were not only women persecuted, there were also male.
Yeah, yeah.
To be fair, but it's true that it's a very small percentage of male. Mm-hmm. And the witch hunters were male. This is, but we didn't want to do this confrontation as well, because
no.
I don't like confronting men versus women. I think that
not helpful.
It's not necessary because saying no, it's male fault. As I said, the accusations in this case of witchery is clear. There were male accusations, but there are also neighbors that were women. Were the women yeah. there? But
yeah.
you have to admit that. And I think this is nice. And this is what makes history truthful, because it puts things into their perspective.
Right? Yeah, mm-hmm. It's exactly the same in Scotland. There were 85% women, so 15% men. Mm-hmm. And it's not that what we're saying is that men are just bad, but we're talking about the society that we live in where women were vulnerable and continue to be vulnerable. That's really what it's about. And it's addressing the issue of vulnerability. And unfortunately, the people who are to blame mostly for women's vulnerability in the modern day are still men. But it's more to do with addressing that vulnerability. And that's why I think the campaign has 21st century resonance, because women look back at that vulnerability and look back at the fear that they must have had over Scotland, 200 years of fear of being called a witch. Mm-hmm. And we now live in the 21st century, and although so many things are different and we live different lives, at night when we go out, we're still scared. There's still a fear. And the question is, why in society, when women and men are equal in terms of amounts, why does that fear still exist? So that's something that's really interesting for us.
Yeah, it's good to know that there are other places that are doing exactly the same things. I think it's nice that we get connected.
Absolutely. Yeah. We are so excited to follow your campaign. But Zoe and I are very, very excited because we want to come to Barcelona and see you.
I love
Barcelona.
I don't know if it's possible now. Or...
Not now.
We are locked down in comarcas, which is like we were locked down in towns, in our towns, and now a little bit more. It's like the territory immediate. Right. I don't know how you...
Yeah. No, we're on strict lockdown.
Yeah, municipality. But
I love Barcelona. So any excuse to go back there and visit again, I very happily would go there.
Yeah. Well, now there's nothing to do in Barcelona.
Sometime soon we'll get back there and we'll meet up with you and we'll raise a glass to the witches.
Yes, that sounds like a great plan.
Okay. Sonia, but thank you so much.
You're
thank you
welcome.
So much for joining us today. It's been really fantastic. Really great to speak to you. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Witches of Scotland podcast. It's been absolutely fascinating. As ever, please tell people about the podcast so we can spread the word. The petition obviously is now closed, but that does not mean that our campaign is gone, because we're still looking to start a memorial. So that's really important. But more importantly, possibly even than that, is that we just want more people to know about what happened in the past so that it doesn't happen again in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to learn more about the Witches of Scotland, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Sign up for our mailing list at www.witchesofscotland.com to keep updated with the campaign. On that site, you'll be able to find how to link with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.